we saved the last for the best. Patrick's in a position where he's going to take all of you heard today, encapsulize it, make some key cogent points, and then you'll all be so impressed that you'll give a standing ovation. Patrick's the, what's your panel?
Just planning director.
Planning director for the city of Encinitas. Patrick and I have worked together 20 some years. He's the father of Encinitas since incorporation. Yeah. And so he's going to talk a little bit about what they're doing up in Encinitas. Project's near dear to my heart.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So Mike noted that we have the sole distinction with him of being the only city that he was not able to deliver a compliance letter from ACD. But Mike's gotten over that. He says it's our fault. And that's probably true. It's tough when you have a community that's very engaged with the process. And so we stepped back, and we're now in a comprehensive general plan process, which is a much better process to be in when you're in a community that is attacking you on all sides. And it is much better to be in a process where you talk about it in a sustainable way. Because now you're talking about it not just on a numbers game or on a state requirement game. You're talking about it in a sense that this is the right thing to do, to reduce greenhouse gas, to be sustainable about it. So the purpose of my talk is going to be on a little bit smaller scale of what mixed use can do on a small scale. Bill Chopic talked at a little bit larger scale. You'll see Encinitas downtown and what is occurring there. I'm going to talk a little bit about what is happening, next one, and then what are the results of our small scale infill projects that are mixed use, and some of the challenges that the developer community is facing. This is just simply a historic picture of a building built in 1930 that's mixed use. 43 units per acre. They will be happy to know there's no parking. I think maybe our new parking policy should be don't ask, don't tell. Where you're parking. I have no idea where these people are parking. But when you think about it, at 43 units per acre, 10 units in the upper floor, it's been a tremendous resource for Encinitas for 80 years. Now, why is that so? You know, it could be because it's mixed use. It might be less likely to turn over because it's mixed use. You have other economic drivers on that project that are keeping it as a 10-unit rental stock. I don't think I can point to anywhere in Encinitas where we have a 10-unit apartment, 43 units per acre, that's 80 years old. But it's here right in our downtown. It also gives you a framework of our character of our downtown. It's basically a two-story. And so in our specific plan that we'll be talking about, it has developed some incentives to try to break the barrier of two stories and try to include a little bit more affordable housing. Just a couple more clicks on that. One more. Basically, our downtown to the north is Moonlight Beach. To the south is the famous Swami's Beach surfing area. We have a coaster stop right pretty much middle in the north. And then the key is North Coast Highway 101, we call Historic Highway 101, comes straight through the middle of our downtown. Our clip, keep going. And I'm gonna say about 12 clicks. Talk about some of our, and one more, yeah. And we're gonna talk about some of the key provisions in our specific plan. And even though this is a small scale, it might be something that could be used on a larger scale. One, the key provision was mixed use. Another key provision is Highway 101, the mixed use zoning on there has no density. And that's kind of interesting. It has no floor area ratio. So what we do is give you a building envelope to the developer, and you can fit whatever units you feel you can fit in that envelope. And we'll show you an example of that. We also have a unique provision that deals with parking. We allow on-street parking to count as credit to the development. And we also have reduced our parking standards within our specific plan from the rest of our city. And we've also looked at an affordable housing incentive, and that's how you get above two stories, is that affordable housing element is part of your project. You can go up to three stories and an additional building height. And we'll show you how that has worked in our community. Lot coverage is 75 to 90%. No setbacks generally in our mixed-use zones downtown. And And then we've also put public investments of $7 million into it. Now let's just see if this next one, keep clicking. Gonna go through about 12 of those. We have various mixed-use projects that have occurred in our downtown, from very small 5,000 square foot lots up to 1.4 acres. And all in trying to maintain that character. And then we'll go through and start talking about some of the results of all of these projects that have occurred in our downtown. And now, Nancy, let's go to the next one. And one more. Now we're gonna walk through a couple samples of how we have small two-story mixed use, just two units, 17 units per acre. So it's very small. And then keep click again. This is the same type of project, however, it's a different design. So it gives a different character to the community. These are on 2nd Street, just off of Highway 101. And continue. This one's unique. It's a little bit larger, not the density that we wanted, but it has three units. And one of the things that we do like about mixed use is we really encourage it. And not just from a housing standpoint, but it is a viability standpoint for our downtown. We think our downtown is successful when it has a good mix of uses, commercial uses, but also a good mix of residential uses. And we think that will end up being a very healthy and successful downtown as a whole. And so we look at our downtown as a whole. This one is unique in the sense that you would think that you could do mixed use with automotive repair. We have two projects that have done small mixed use, just two units above the automotive repair shops. And the other unique one about this, this is our smallest lot that has done underground parking, 15,000 square feet, and they have done underground parking. And so the next, Nancy. Just another mixed use, one unit in this case, but still we consider all of our projects going in. I'm not sure we've had a commercial project that has gone in without some residential component. And next. This one is just a small lot, 5,000 square foot, 40 units. It ends up being 30 units per acre. This is fully restricted to affordable units. But for our downtown, it maintains the character and gives good affordability for the community. And we're going to go into a couple larger projects. This is called Moonlight Lofts. It is 19 units, 25 units per acre. It's mixed use on 3/4 of an acre lot. And go to the next one, Nancy. Parking is off the alley. It goes into an underground parking, and then it also has garages for the residential units. And then the lower portion of that slide, again, on-site, on-street parking credit for the project. They had a huge win, because they had a lot of on-street parking. And so that was a good thing for them. But this didn't stop there. Were our inclusionary housing requirement, they wanted to pay an in-lieu fee for that. And Encinitas is expensive on the inclusionary housing. But look what it accomplished. Next slide. We had a nonprofit that was coming in, and they were actually wanting to buy the boathouses. And that really is an icon for Encinitas. But behind the boathouses are four fourplex. And so we worked with the developer to transfer the inclusionary housing money to the nonprofit to acquire it. And we have four restricted units in the map to accomplish for affordable housing. But it is interesting when you work with a small community how you can try to accomplish things. So we have a new beautiful project that is proud because they were able to help buy the iconic boathouses to preserve for the future, and they're built in 1929. They tend to define our, and they are in downtown, they tend to define who we are, but it also accomplishes affordable housing. And so next one. The Pacific Station, this is just kind of an artist graphic of it. It's our largest mixed-use project, and I wanted to talk a little bit about that. During the recession, you know what projects went forward? Our two largest mixed-use projects. That's it. The residential, multifamily, and single family are on hold. But the Moonlight Lofts went forward and Pacific Station went forward. So they do have some level of viability, even in a recession. Now I find that a little bit interesting to consider, because sometimes we think that mixed use is difficult. Both Moonlight Lofts and this one had development already on the site. So it wasn't a vacant land. This one, we had a metal building, very large, that was the corporate officers' offices for a clothing company and manufacturing. And so that was ripped down. And It is 40, a couple more is where some of the uses are. It has residential on the top, 47 units, 34 units per acre, and commercial units, and a big win for us downtown is Whole Foods is moving in as one of the anchor tenants. And that, when you think about a healthy downtown, you're thinking about everything, not just the commercial uses and the variety of commercial uses, but the residential components too. And so next. Okay. This is it under construction. It's hopefully will be done in a couple months. Whole Foods will probably be moving in, hopefully within a couple months, they're in for tenant improvements. The residential units are on top, so typically a townhome, second, third stories. Now this is where the incentive was used in our specific plan. And it gets to how do you get mixed use to really do residential. Affordable housing element has to be part of it. If you do an affordable housing element, a part of our mixed use in our downtown, no density. So you work out the density. This is at 34 units per acre. And four are inclusionary. So he was able to get on three stories. He also was able to get an additional building height. So it was a way where a developer was able to use that incentive and click to the next one. A little bit of the statistics on Pacific Station. Again, four affordable units and an inclusionary, so we consider that perpetuity. They don't have a time period as to when they remove their affordability. Does have two levels of underground parking on this project, which was part of the expense of the project. So it really ends up being a good project. We're gonna see how the community's gonna react to this, both Moonlight, Lofts, and this one, because they're three stories. And that's new to the community. But that's taken advantage of our incentive program. And so far, this seems to be received fairly well in the community. And so next. Now the results. Results of the various small lot development to the larger lots. And this is all probably small to everyone in this room. But for our downtown, it does range. 1.4 acres downtown is probably large for us. But we feel that we've had 12 mixed-use projects built from 5,000 square feet to 1.4 acres, and it's resulted in what we consider to be an extremely well-mixed projects. And you're talking about a city that doesn't have a redevelopment agency. We don't have the funding put into this, so we have to work with our development standards to try and encourage affordable units or higher density units. So we think we have a good variation of commercial uses from a grocery store to automotive repair to offices of all kinds to fitness center, all of this within a mixed use component. And we're extremely pleased about our residential mix with 86 units being totally built. 23% are a rental stock, which we think is a good idea. When you look at the small projects at 5,000 square feet, they don't do a condo map on a small project. It's rental stock. So we've had a lot of rental stock added to our downtown, which we think is extremely important. And then we've also had, is it saying 14% affordable? That exceeds our density, our inclusionary of 10%. But that's just simply working with the developers and having those incentives so that we can accomplish things that we're not able to accomplish because we don't have redevelopment. And when we look at the mix of the residential, from rental to sales, from sizes, 600 square feet up to 2,200 square feet, and that's not just one 600 square feet. Pacific Station has multiple 600 and under 1,000 square foot third condos in that project. To larger units, the range of mix, we think what that equals is a healthy downtown. And it's tough to, you don't really want to, in our minds, we don't want to look at one mixed-use project. We want to look at the whole downtown. And that's what's really been helpful with our Main Street organization, because they're very concerned about that too. They want the rental stock. They want the variation. They want the small units, because they know that all that makes is a healthy, viable downtown. And next. And clip four. After this, we sat down with two developers, one of Pacific Station and one of a 5,000 square foot lot development, and two architects, and asked them basically these questions. What are the challenges that developers face? What can cities do to make programs more feasible for you in a mixed-use program? And we're talking about the small-scale, small-lot development. And the tough question was, how do Encinitas regulations benefit you or hinder you? And what's the criteria for site selection? And click to the next one. And we group these into two categories, one challenges and what, and the other category is what developers want. And just click one, two, three, four. And these are what they told us about the challenges. Location. They talked about coastal. One is, the only reason they talked about coastal was because of the recession. They felt the coastal community was a little bit more recession-proof. That's why they decided to build a mixed use here in Encinitas, or it could have been in Carlsbad. But that was just to help weather the recession. But the second one was really quite interesting, was when you have a community from a Main Street organization to the neighborhood to the greater community to the city, all in agreement with mixed use, they feel that's a win. They are going in realizing that they have success right off from the start. And so you're not going in a contentious situation. You have a community that's buying off on mixed use. And they felt that about Encinitas. The second one was the right type of mixed use. They feel a token commercial or non-residential is not going to work. They felt you needed to have a solid core of commercial. And then lot size was important. They felt that like a 5,000 square foot lot size or under 15,000 was really a lifestyle change. It was where an architect or someone wants to come down into their offices and put two units above. That wasn't necessarily an investment. We start seeing our investments when they are 15,000 and above, although we can point to under 15,000 where it was clearly an investment for mixed use. But that was kind of an interesting point, because the cost per square foot for mixed use is substantially more on the small scale versus the larger scale. And then the process. They felt that people view mixed use as a commercial zone. And they felt commercial zoning is easier than going into someone's resident community and building residential right next to them. And for Pacific Station, it was, I didn't think we could build 47 units and that much commercial land without doing an EIR. And we got through the process relatively smoothly. Very little controversy at the hearing process. And so go to the next one and click it four times. So what do developers want? They say flexibility. They do like the 101 mixed use, a zone where it's no density, no floor area ratio. And that ties to the next one, authorize more square footage. They say, give us the square footage and let us play with it. So we play with it to make sure we can fit within your envelope, depending on the commercial tenants and the uses they want and the residential uses they want to make it work. For Pacific Station, they're in a much better position because they build smaller units. Now, I'm hoping and praying Pacific Station is extremely successful, because all we get in Encinitas is large units, whether it's a single family home or a luxury condo. I'm really hoping that pans out to be an example that can be shown to other developers in our community that you don't have to build a luxury condo or a luxury home. And so far, we think that's working with them. And they want more flexibility in parking, which has been talked about, shared parking, less parking for smaller units. And you probably know all of the things that they've talked about and what they would like to see for more flexibility. We don't have a regulation, but we do tend to put a condition on that your residential parking can't be shared with your commercial. And they do not like that, because the resident's gone for the day, so your commercial should be able to share some level or some portion of that parking. And then, of course, they want the permit process to accelerate, which, if anyone knows Encinitas, will be a tough one for us to do. But the Pacific Station actually went through fairly quickly because of the things that we've talked about. And then, you'll click down three, maybe, down there. Talking about lessons learned. Mixed use on a small scale is working in Encinitas. We're extremely pleased with the variety of unit sizes that we're getting, rental versus sale, and the number of affordability, and all of that is without redevelopment funding. It's just using our incentives within our development standards. We do recognize that small lot development for mixed use, like a 5,000, might be more of a lifestyle change and isn't going to really maybe meet affordable housing needs, but it does provide a rental stock that maybe by design might be more affordable than other housing. And then flexibility, again, is what they feel is the key. They really do like our no density, and they like our no floor area ratio, and give us the building envelope, and let us work with that. And that kind of results in the last one. This is what they said. It allowed for better diversity of housing. I can't tell you how pleased I was with that comment. It wasn't saying affordable, it was diversity. And when we're going through our general plan process, we're hearing that from the community. Not necessarily, oh, go build more density so we can accomplish affordable housing. We've heard comments about this community would be a disaster if we lost our diversity of our people. That's what makes this community. And that's Encinitas talking. Those are good things that we're hearing through the process. And so we heard it from the developer too, that it gives them the ability to do a diversity of housing. So Pacific Station goes from 600 square feet up to 2,200 square feet. And he wanted that diversity built into his project. And next one, last couple of lessons learned. Projects are high quality. We're not getting crummy development within Encinitas, and that's probably because it's a coastal community. But we feel the design, and we feel we're working within our character of our community, and still being able to accomplish a lot. And then the affordable housing incentives, we believe, are working. We're getting 14% of affordable housing, and that's restricted housing. That's not considering housing that might be by design affordable. So that's it. Thank you for allowing me to do this.
The last session is the second half of questions for the panelists. If you've got a real quick question for Paul, now would be the time to ask it. He's got to catch a plane. All right. Yeah, the bribe's paid on. Okay. Now we kind of cut off Patrick and Dave from questions, so now would be a good time to get those questions out, as well as the other panelists. So, floor is yours.
This is for Patrick. You mentioned you had an in-lieu parking fee. Could you tell us what that is?
We don't. That's what the developers said would be one of the advantages of parking incentives, is to do that in-lieu parking. So they, if they aren't able to accomplish it on their site, they could pay a fee that it could be accomplished somewhere else in downtown. We don't have that. We are taking that as feedback from them.
I feel like Phil Donahue.
Actually, do you have a quick question for Paul, or were you going to just say something else?
No, by no means, but I want to cut you off. But I was going to ask, do you have a public parking? Is that what you...
We're fortunate because we have the coaster station, so we have 1, 2, 3, and we're building the 4th public parking downtown. And it works out great because it's filled during the day, and at the evening and the weekends, it's filled for the businesses in the community. So we do have quite a bit of public parking that's shared with the coaster.
So people don't go home at 8 o'clock? Is it, they actually stay on the street?
Yeah, my question is a clarification one. I didn't understand the 120 days that you discussed. Was that 120 days after you've submitted your plan to be certified by you, or is it like the 120 days before your product is due that you have to have some kind of certification that it's on the right track?
120 days, that's through the process, submit a draft, get findings, adopt. By the statutory scheduled date, which is estimated, I guess, around January 2013, or adoption. So if you adopt before that, then it doesn't really kick in. So does that make sense? 120 days after January 2013, submit draft findings, adopt through the process. But you know, we're looking at that stuff in more detail.
Question for Pat. Pat, I'm wondering, I'm working on a mixed-use ordinance for Carlsbad right now, and it's difficult to figure out density sometimes on mixed-use projects. When you look at the lot area, the parking required for commercial, et cetera, et cetera. Are you just basing density and its neatness on the lot area?
When density, correct, on the, where we have no density, it's just based on the lot area. That was 34 units per acre for Pacific Station. And then on others, it's, we do, when we do have density, it's based on the lot area.
Other questions?
For Patrick, when we did our housing elements, we didn't send those to the Coastal Commission for certification. Coastal Act says that LCPs do not need to have housing policies. And so I never sent our housing element to the Coastal Commission. Of course, HCD did its job in reviewing it for adequacy and so forth. So.
Yeah, our housing element has some of the discussion highlighted by coastal staff, so it is part of our LCP, not the detailed policies. But I've also heard Coastal Commission is rethinking that. But when you're dealing with density changes, it is Coastal Commission.
Yes. Other questions? All right, now this looks like it's going to be the last question. And so no pressure. But this better be one really great question. All right.
I'll just say this has been one of the most enlightening APA seminars I've been to, but probably the most sobering. Mr. McDougall has done a truly job of putting the fear of HCD in me. Particularly thinking about our opportunities in Oceanside, essentially a built-out jurisdiction where the growth potential for affordable housing is in our transit corridor, 101 corridor, a context very similar to the one that that Mr. Murphy just described, where the land is not only the most fragmented in the city, but it's also the most costly. And so thinking about Dave's pro forma and how affordable housing gets built in that context, it's an incredible challenge. And Paul and I were talking earlier about opportunities for, we have a lot of 5,000 square foot lots subdivided in the 1880s with property owners who have that point of view that, hey, this land will be worth something someday. And property owners who are putting 4,000 or 5,000 square foot lots on the market for $1 million. How do you encourage consolidation of these small parcels that in and of themselves are not particularly viable for affordable housing development in and of themselves when the zoning is already very accommodating, whether it's commercial or residential, it allows for high density residential development. Our parking standards are not particularly relative to other jurisdictions, not particularly onerous, and yet those are not sufficient incentives to encourage people to consolidate and build this type of housing. So it's a very general question, but given that context, and we're trying to essentially do the right thing by focusing our housing in these areas that truly are smart growth areas, given their proximity to transit. And that's where it needs to go for sustainability purposes, but it seems almost impossible.
He said a sobering comment. Actually, as an Irishman, I think it would turn out to be an opportunity for another Guinness or two. it was a very good, you met the standard in terms of a nice wrap-up question in terms of pointing out the dilemma that you all are going to deal with here in terms of there's a lot of great opportunities. The Sprinter Corridor and the Coaster, the trolley, that they all have opportunities, but you're facing a lot of tough decisions, especially in a policy context that oftentimes a community is arguing for a different kind of an output. And so I'm glad you guys are working out there and not me. Thank you for our afternoon panelists. They did a really nice job. Thank you to the APAers, Brooke, all the people that worked on the project. We got a lot of great support Ms. Clinker did an excellent job in terms of, Nancy worked real hard on this, trying to get us all together for a dry run and usher us through this process. So thank you very much for a lot of hard work. With that, and as you drive out, check out opportunities for smart growth as you commute to your residence.